I'm joined by Jack Schenker in Cairo. Jack, you've written in the past about how pervasive the revolution is, and we need to look beyond political institutions, but it looks the revolution from here looks pretty dicey at this stage. How do you see it?
It does, and I certainly can't pretend to, you know, anything other than, you know, that it's been quite a depressive couple of days from a revolutionary perspective. And certainly on that political and institutional level, SCAF, the military junta, appear to have played their hand very well and, at least for now, institutionally quelled some of the momentum towards political change. But it's interesting, I've just been on the phone to a political analyst called Michael Hanna, who always has interesting things to say in Egypt, and he was making the point effectively that SCAF and the deep state may have won the battle, but in many ways they've maybe made it harder for themselves to win the war. He was arguing that if you look back onto February the 11th last year, when Mubarak first stepped down, the military had this huge groundswell of legitimacy, of popular support. He described them as effectively saintly. Nobody really wanted to question their transition plan, and nobody really was questioning the sort of soft power that they wielded over different aspects of the state. But now, you know, everything is, he described it as being the role of the military being absolutely at the heart of the body politic. There is a unified political class who are, although, I mean, they are fragmented in their own way, but on the issue of the military, when it comes to the more far-reaching aspects of military control over the political process, it is now the subject of debate, it is now the subject of opposition, it's now the subject of resistance. Certainly SCAF have played their hand very well in frustrating the creation of genuinely democratic institutions that reflect the revolutionary will, but they've also established themselves as a very obvious target for those that want political change. In the long run, whether that will prove to be a smart move from their perspective remains to be seen.
I just wonder if you can clear up a few loose ends. On the question of the parliament, the speaker's been saying that he's had no notification that it's been dissolved. What's the latest on that?
Well, there's still a lot of confusion. As you probably know, when we first heard this constitutional ruling that a third of the seats were invalid, it wasn't clear that that meant that the entire institution would be dissolved. It was state television that then told us that that decision had been made. They then rode back on it, retracted it, and then went back on the retraction and said, no, it does mean it's been dissolved. And certainly the impression everybody's had today is that Parliament is no longer in operation. And at the very least, because there is a constitutional requirement for Parliament to sit with a certain number of seats, the fact that one third of the seats have been dissolved means that you know, Parliament essentially doesn't have quorum and can't meet and legislate. So, I mean, at the moment, as far as I understand it, that is still the situation. Sardar Khatami is saying that he hasn't received any formal notification from SCAF that there is be, or from the Constitutional Court, that the Parliament's been dissolved. But that could just be that today is a Friday, which is obviously a holiday, you know, basically the weekend here in Egypt, and that the requisite paperwork hasn't come through. Or it could mean something more interesting. I think there's going to be, unfortunately, a lot of uncertainties and loose ends, which we'll be attempting to tie up over the next few days, probably with mixed success.
Okay, well, let's look ahead to the election then. Is the fix on?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, whenever we've chatted in the past, over the past 18 months, at the kind of different stages of elections, I've said the same thing, and I'll say it again now. I haven't seen any evidence of systematic, top-down, state-orchestrated vote manipulation on a mass scale of the sort that we witness so regularly under Mubarak. The fact is that millions of people tomorrow will turn out and vote for Mohamed Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood candidate. And it is logistically very difficult, given the structure of the elections, for those votes to be discounted, even if those pulling the levers behind the scenes wanted to discount them. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be local violations, but the fact is that I think we need to zoom out of this idea of specific kind of electoral fraud and look at the broader picture, which is that these elections are taking place in a in a political climate that has been entirely manipulated by SCAF, by the old regime. From day one, it's been manipulated to give people a sense of insecurity, a sense of fear, a nostalgia for stability and a sense of security in the streets. And in that respect, the fix has been on for the last 18 months. And I think that at least until the last couple of days, I would have said as a result of that, Shafiq probably has the upper hand in terms of the popular vote, because you know, many people were attracted to his sort of end to chaos narrative, and many of the people who might be expected to turn out and resist him and to try and stop the old regime reasserting itself are so disillusioned with the Muslim Brotherhood and Mohamed Morsi that they just won't turn up to vote at all. However, the developments in the last couple of days may shift that. We've already seen the April 6th revolutionary movement saying that it will now endorse Mohamed Morsi, even though they have many, many ideological differences with the Muslim Brotherhood. Maybe we'll see more of that over the coming hours, and Morsi might pick up enough steam to come out triumphant after all.
In your interview with Mohamed El-Baradei, he questioned why the Muslim Brotherhood didn't pull out of the presidential race. Can you explain why?
Yeah, I mean, I think that ultimately the Muslim Brotherhood is a reformist, small C conservative force. It always has been. In many ways, it always will be. It has played its part in the revolution. There have been moments in the ongoing revolution when it has seen it as it, in its own. It's considered that it's in its own interest to kind of make alliances with revolutionary forces and to help attack some of the institutions of the state. But fundamentally, it's not a revolutionary movement. It never has been. It's always gone for compromise and sort of careful step-by-step incremental change, evolutionary change, over what it sees as dangerous, dramatic street mobilization. And part of that is its kind of ideology, and part of it comes as a result of being kind of repressed for many decades by the Egyptian state. It's constantly trying to seek, I guess, alliances and understandings with those with their hands on the levers of power. And what we've seen in the past 18 months has underlined that again and again. Whenever there has been a moment of clash, a moment of people coming down to the street and rejecting political institutions and rejecting SCAF altogether, the Muslim Brotherhood at the critical juncture has said, no, we don't want this kind of radical change. We're going to stand with the status quo. We saw it in November. We saw it before that with the constitutional amendments last March. We're seeing it now. The Brotherhood believe, rightly or wrongly, that they can carve out a role for themselves in this, albeit very flawed and messy, institutional settlement for the new Egypt. They're aware that it's flawed and it's messy. They're aware that they are, in some ways, making kind of contingent alliances with the deep secular state that would lock them up in an instant if it had the chance. But it still thinks that's preferable to the in their eyes, chaos that would ensue if they completely withdrew from the process and encouraged all of their supporters to take to the street. Unfortunately, I'm not surprised by it, but I think many people who had a lot of hope for the Muslim Brotherhood with regards to the revolution are very disappointed in the route they've taken.
The Muslim Brotherhood's own sort of private polling that they say says they'll win, and do you think they're right?
Well, I've also heard today, not from the Muslim Brotherhood's private polling, but from a different source, that some polling indicates that they'll win by a margin of about 1.5 million. I mean, I think it's in some ways the Muslim Brotherhood's poll predictions are often the ones you can rely on more than others, because they do have a very good institutional logistical network. They've got a very strong get out of the vote operation, and they can often predict quite accurately how many people they're going to be able to get to the ballot box. The only thing I'd say is that, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood also predicted that it was going to win in the first round of these elections, and of course they were right. Their candidate did come first, but what they didn't predict was that actually they would lose a total of 5 million votes compared to the parliamentary elections, as in 5 million fewer Egyptians decided to come out and cast their ballot for the Muslim Brotherhood due to the stuff we've been talking about, the kind of disillusionment with the Brotherhood's capabilities of pushing forward this revolution and standing up for revolutionary demands. And I think, you know, it's very easy for the Brotherhood to imagine that everybody who's resisting Shafiq and everybody who's horrified at the idea of Mubarak's ex-prime minister becoming the president of Egypt's Second Republic, that all of those people will flock to Morsi, from the activists and revolutionaries and just, you know, ordinary friends who I've been speaking to over the past few weeks. I really think that that's an overstatement, and I think that I think it's going to be very close. I think that a lot of the people who would have who weren't willing to vote for the Brotherhood will be galvanised to come out and vote now, given this kind of institutional land grab by SCAF that we've seen in the past 48 hours. But I'd say that their absolute confidence they're going to win is probably misplaced. It's going to be closer than we think.
I'll put you on the line. Go on. Who's going to win?
Every time I've made predictions for the Guardian live blog, I've come up wonderfully. I think for the first round I made about three different predictions, three calls to you guys. And thankfully, every single one of them went wrong. You know, lucky that I'm being paid as a journalist and not as a political analyst, because my career would be over pretty quickly. I think, literally up to 48 hours ago, I would have said definitely Shafiq. Right now, I'm genuinely in two minds. I'm not hedging my bets. I just can't call it. It's too close. Like I say, Shafiq, up to 48 hours ago, I would have said Shafiq. Now I'd say it's too close to call.
Is it the big protest, or a protest, I'm not sure it's going to be big, is planned in Tahrir Square in a few hours. Is the street going to play a part in the next 48 hours?
Well, this is the really interesting question, or at least a question I find interesting. There's a huge amount of anger and frustration, but people are struggling to find an outlet for it. And we saw this after the Mubarak verdicts at the beginning of the month as well. People, and there's good reason for this, are beginning to see Tahrir Square as something of a trap, a sort of sanitized space in which the forces behind the status quo allow dissent to be aired, a place where people can kind of let off steam, but ultimately a kind of contained urban space in which, you know, nothing changes. And, you know, when we had the Mubarak trial verdicts come in, we saw people flocking to Tahrir in quite large numbers, and there was an element of kind of festivity and an element of anger. People were letting off fireworks and chanting. The security forces kept their distance, and after a couple of days, everybody sort of went home, and life went on, and the counter-revolution went on much as before. And I think that people fear that SCAF and military generals have found a very effective way to essentially co-opt Tahrir into kind of their own authority, and have managed to create a situation where essentially mobilization in Tahrir doesn't really threaten the course of institutional politics. Of course, now, it would be different if security forces were sent in to attack the square, and we saw the scenes that we witnessed so much last year of tear gas, rubber bullets, live ammunition, people being shot dead by Egyptian soldiers and Egyptian police. That would certainly radicalise sentiment and get more people onto the streets. But of course, at least right now, SCAF is too smart for that. They're allowing people to demonstrate in Tahrir. They're allowing people to go round and round the Midan. That means the square, holding up placards and singing songs, and then they're allowing them to go home again. And this has led to a lot of disillusionment. People aren't sure where to take their protests and where to take their energy. I think we will see, it's about 37 degrees centigrade here right now, so we obviously won't see people in the square in large numbers for a couple of hours until the sun goes down. I think we will see people in the square. Whether it reaches any kind of critical mass, I think, in some ways, it's quite doubtful, at least for now. Although, you know, that might change after the election, especially if Shafiq emerges triumphant.
Okay, Jack, we'll speak over the weekend. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Thanks, Matt. Cheers.